This is Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. There's a long tradition of physicists jumping into the biological sciences when big breakthroughs are on the horizon. It happened when the nature of DNA was being worked out, and it's happening again. Later this hour, Nigel Goldenfield talks about the concepts that unite his work on how water flows and how life evolves. First, though, news that the cargo ship El Faro was sunk near the Bahamas during Hurricane Joaquin is more than just a headline from a faraway disaster. It represents the loss of two sailors who got their training at the Mass Maritime Academy here on Cape Cod and their 31 crewmates. For some engineers in Woods Hole, the story has an eerie similarity to another disaster 35 years ago. The Derbyshire was a British ship carrying a load of iron ore from Canada when it sank off the coast of Japan in 1980, killing all 44 people aboard. Andy Bowen is a principal engineer at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, and he led the survey of the Derbyshire once it was found in 1994. Andy, welcome to Living Lab.
Thank you.
Okay, so the Derbyshire was built in 1976. El Faro was built in 1975. The Derbyshire was about 1,000 feet long. El Faro was about 800 feet long. Both went down in big tropical storms. A lot of clear parallels there. What was your reaction when you first heard about this ship sinking?
Well, I mean, the immediate feeling was one of sorrow or for the loss of the crew, but there was clearly a similarity between the circumstances, as you suggested, relating to the loss of the Derbyshire and the El Faro. And they are in many ways different, although clearly there was extreme weather as part of the root cause. The Derbyshire disappeared without any trace. There was not even any Mayday calls. There was a larger degree of mystery surrounding the loss of that vessel. Nonetheless, both succumbed to the forces of nature. And, you know, whenever such things occur, it's important to try and draw as many lessons as you can so that such instances are not re-encountered.
Well, so as you say, there was really no sense of what happened until the wreck was found and surveyed, and that kind of put together more of the picture. So how did the Derbyshire go down?
As it would turn out, and based on the sort of forensic survey that we undertook, the wreck assessors that were appointed by the British government reviewed the material and determined that the likely scenario was the foredeck was compromised in the way of the ventilators and possibly the foredeck hatch, which over time allowed the bow to take on a significant amount of water, which in turn lowered the freeboard and exposed the hatches on the vessel to boarding seas, which ultimately caused a failure, catastrophic failure of the forwardmost hatch. And then in the case of Derbyshire, which is a different kind of vessel, once that occurred, there was a domino effect. And the estimates were that the ship was lost in the span of 2 or 3 minutes, a 1,000-foot-long vessel. It was staggering to consider.
Wow. You know, we think about being able to put together that kind of detailed picture, perhaps based on a black box that is actually transmitting data and what people are saying. How do you put together that kind of story from the physical evidence of a shipwreck?
Well, this was the big challenge. And as we were commendated by the Prime Minister at the time, it was a fantastic achievement in sort of forensic investigation. I mean, in instances where aircraft crash, for example, often it's possible to recover the debris and analyze it using fairly traditional techniques. In the case of Derbyshire, we were called upon to actually use a suite of sort of novel tools to inspect the wreckage and provide that sort of forensic examination in situ or on the seafloor. This, I think, if I recall, over 4,000 meters deep. So there were a range of possible scenarios that the assessors had determined. I think there were actually 13 of them. And the survey was designed in a very rigorous manner to collect specific pieces of information that allowed the assessors to make judgments with regard to the likelihood of each of those potential scenarios.
You mentioned the depth of the Derbyshire. The El Faro went down, by accounts I've seen, in 15,000 feet of water.
Right. Similar depth.
What are the technological challenges if we were to try to find the remaining wreck of the El Faro?
Yeah, the surveying and locating the wreckage is a challenge probably mostly brought on by the uncertainty about where the wreckage may lie. So the investigators would be looking carefully at, the last time the ship was heard from, what the likely drift might have been, the expected time of loss. They might even be looking at sonar records or any shred or piece of information that they might have at their disposal to get a better estimate as to where the ship actually departed the surface and therefore most likely would be on the seafloor. And then once you'd made that kind of determination, there's a range of techniques. Back in the days of the Derbyshire, you would tow a sonar system at the end of a very long cable. That's now been superseded with autonomous underwater vehicles with similar side-scan sonars on board, but no tethers. And you would deploy vehicles like that and essentially scan the seafloor to find the wreckage, which should be relatively straightforward, I think, in this instance, once you've narrowed down the search area.
What might we learn from looking at that wreckage? I mean, finding a black box in this case is actually a possibility that could give us a lot of information. But what kind of information might we get from finding the wreck of the El Faro itself?
Right. And it will be most likely based on similar techniques that were used in the case of Derbyshire. So, you know, the surveyors or the people who receive the information that's gathered will be looking at the damage, at the circumstances and the way the debris lies on the seafloor, and therefore be able to draw conclusions from that. Again, in a similar way to what's done in an air crash or any kind of disaster where analyzing the debris and after the fact is really informative in terms of trying to give people a clear story as to what exactly happened so it can be avoided again.
One thing we do seem to know at this point is that El Faro lost power and lost propulsion before it sank. Why would that be significant?
In those conditions, I think it would be important from two perspectives. One would be that, you know, the voyage was undertaken with an expectation that the ship was capable of taking a track which would have avoided the storm altogether if there were difficulties with the propulsion system. And I think in this instance, the hurricane built in strength in ways that were not anticipated. So it became much larger, much more quickly than people expected. So if you sort of add that fact up with possible issues with the propulsion system, it means now all of a sudden you're not able to outrun or put the vessel in a safer position with regard to the storm itself. And then once you're in the grips of, you know, heavy seas and hurricane conditions, not having the ability to maneuver the vessel is a serious danger to the ship itself in terms of, you know, being breached or overcome by the seas. Ships are designed generally with certain attributes in terms of the way they resist the weather and seas. Typically, that's by putting the bow into it or one end or the other. And in the case of no power, then the possibility might be that the ship was lying a hull, they might say, or sideways to the wind and seas, in which case it would be really exposed in a way that would make it extremely vulnerable.
Much easier to essentially roll.
Roll or be damaged by waves, which over time would compromise the sort of structural or watertight integrity of the vessel. This was a container ship, so the possibility that and this is true actually for most large commercial vessels, that the cargo might have shifted, changing the balance of the vessel and, again, making it more vulnerable. These accidents, like most things, are never necessarily one single event or cause. There's, a series of things that line up to result in a disaster like this.
You mentioned the 50-foot waves that we think were out there at the time during Joaquin. But one of the other things that came out of the Derbyshire sinking and survey was research on rogue waves and their importance and the fact that they may be more common than we think. So what is a rogue wave? And is that a possible factor with El Faro?
Yeah, the study of rogue waves has been something of a topic, certainly for a variety of purposes. But, for seafarers, it's obviously a significant concern. And if you think of the ocean being, a series of waves, the possibility that those might interfere with each other in such a way that they actually create this much larger wave than would otherwise be the case is statistically quite possible, and it's been shown to be likely in certain parts of the ocean. Certainly may have something to do with the currents and the direction of the seas, with the likelihood of a rogue wave having been built up. Regardless of the actual circumstances, once you take a wave of such significant height above the sort of average seas, that can become a serious concern and, you know, create huge loads on structures, which, again, if they're exposed in the way that El Faro might have been, could create, very dire circumstance for the ship and crew.
Is there any way to know after the fact if that is what happened?
I think there is, yeah, definitely. As I mentioned a moment ago, you know, if this type of work does actually take place, the investigators would be looking for signs of damage from seas, areas of the hull that might have been flooded when the ship actually left the surface. There are a variety of techniques that can be employed to examine the information to draw those kinds of conclusions.
One of the things that came out of the Derbyshire survey was a change in how the international body that regulates ships changed how those ships actually were built. There were discoveries about the seaworthiness of that kind of ship. Would those rules apply to ships that were already built, like El Faro?
I think that in the case of the Derbyshire, the change in the regulations for construction, in this case of bulk carriers, had everything to do with the way the bow was constructed. So I'm not entirely sure whether that was retroactive. In other words, that bulk carriers that were already in operation or service had to be modified, but certainly newer ones had what are called forecastles. So they had a raised section of the bow that made them a little bit more resistant to boarding seas, which was, in the case of loss of Derbyshire, an important consideration. I think, it's far too early to tell whether, first of all, whether the wreck will be located and examined. But if it is, one of the results certainly would be if there is something about the class of the vessel or ways in which the ship is constructed or, in fact, even maintained, those could be the resulting sort of legacy of the El Faro loss, which, I think in the case of Derbyshire, we were really pleased to have participated in a survey of that type, which ultimately changed the way the ships were built and, made them safer.
There is controversy brewing at this point about whether the captain's decision of the El Faro to even go this route should have been overruled by the company. Also, whether or not some work that had been taking place with the engine and an upcoming overhaul might have contributed to the loss of power. After the survey of the Derbyshire, this leading up to these changes in regulations, there was quite a bit of controversy about who might have been to blame for the wreck. And your survey kind of got caught up in that. Could a survey of El Faro help settle some of those questions of blame, or is that not really what it's about?
I would choose to look at it not so much about assigning blame as it would be helping others in similar circumstances avoid making similar mistakes. So, for example, if there was something about the decision-making process in the case of the ship of El Faro, that turned out with hindsight and all the benefits that gives us to have suggested a different approach to examining the safety of a voyage of that type or even extending to the questions of maintenance, et cetera, that those lessons would be shared, again, with an objective towards having everybody learn from that and hopefully not repeat the same mistakes or errors.
Engineers from Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution have been involved in finding multiple shipwrecks, also airplane wrecks, with the end goal of helping explain what happened in these events. I'd say maybe science for the greater good, applying technologies that we have, trying to answer these questions that are of social importance. Is there also, when you undertake these kind of surveys, an opportunity for scientific or engineering advancement?
I think there are opportunities for both those things, certainly. I think generally when it comes to the question of locating wreckage, doing surveys, et cetera, the largest value lies in the lessons learned, of course. But from a technical perspective, oftentimes these expeditions can require certain new technologies or techniques. In the case of the Derbyshire, there was a requirement that we take or that we basically document the entire debris field through the use of digital photography. And I think it was, I can't even remember, it was hundreds of thousands of digital photographs had to be assembled of an area that was much larger than had previously ever been achieved. So the process of gathering that information, knowing that you had 100% coverage, collating the images, and then presenting them turned out to actually be quite a valuable lesson, if you will, that could have a favorable impact on the way science is conducted. So there's sort of a little return from that perspective. You know, I think also we have a kind of a responsibility from a almost a social perspective to take some of the techniques that are used for science and put them out into general use by, you know, people who might, in this case, survey deep parts of the ocean for other purposes. And in the case of Derbyshire, that was definitely what occurred.
Andy Bowen is a principal engineer at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. He led the survey of the wreck of the Derbyshire in 1996. Andy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Up next, complexity and individuality in physics, biology, and life. That's coming up on Living Lab after a short break.